And welcome to Artist Materialist. I'm Susanna, an artist and graphic designer.
I'm Dan, a material scientist.
And today we are discussing an article from The Atlantic called The 5 Years That Changed Dating, subtitled When Tinder Became Available to Smartphone Users in 2013, it ushered in a new era in the history of romance. And this was one that you suggested, and since you are younger, I know you have more experience than I do with this sort of app. So what was it that specifically drew you to this article?
I thought this particular article by Ashley Petters was well written and did a good job covering a lot of the different aspects of what has changed due to dating apps, and also a little bit about the history of them. And there's a lot that it leaves out, but I think that at least with respect to Tinder, it does a good job of mentioning that. Really, it started off with Grindr, that was the first one that was a mobile first dating app. And then from Grindr, somebody figured out how to make it so that it would also work with the straight community. And then it exploded from there. And I had done some of the first dating apps. I was on OkCupid, and before that, going back all the way to Yahoo Personals.
It's interesting because as you talk, I'm realizing how different smartphones made the whole online dating environment. I mean, I experienced, at least through my friends, when all of the websites came online and there was internet dating, and that was the new thing. And there was, like you said, there was OkCupid and all the other sites. eHarmony and all that. But
Match, yeah.
yeah, Match, I'm trying to think of all the names. But the smartphones and the availability of apps really did change a lot.
Yeah, it was a and it really started from Grindr, because there was a sense that you didn't have the same two-sided problem where on the question with dating apps has always been, how do you convince women to be part of it?
It's the old problem that they have at bars, and the reasons that bars have ladies' nights is the guys will show up, but how do you get the women in the door?
Right. And Grindr didn't have that problem.
Yes.
And so that was the first one to start. And there was a lot of experimentation that went on and you can see the evolution of things. I don't know if it's still the, I just from friends, what they told me, Grindr initially was very GPS specific. It would say, there is a person on Grindr within 20 feet of you or something like that.
Oh, wow. So it was really intended for people who were maybe at a bar or a club and were looking
Right.
for someone to just make it easier to find the specific person you could
Yes.
hook up
And
with that night at the same place. Okay.
and it would and people would use it where they would be out at a club, and if it wasn't, if it was a not a gay bar, they would pull up Grindr and be like, sort of like checking your phone was almost could be interpreted as like, oh, are you on Grindr?
That's really interesting.
And there were similar things earlier on. I know the earlier version of the OkCupid app experimented with something like that, where you could turn on a little beacon that said that you were out on the town, and if somebody else was also had their beacon on, that would sort of notify you that you were nearby. But that was not a successful experiment.
With OkCupid, I can understand why the location-based alerts wouldn't have worked so well because they're more of a dating app. They're or a dating site. They're designed to help you find someone who might be, a long-term relationship. Whereas if you're out on the town and looking for someone near you, that's definitely more of a meeting or hookup scenario.
So I the person who created OkCupid also wrote a book, and his name's Christian Rutter, who's one of the co-founders, and he wrote this wonderful book called Dataclasm, which goes into all sorts of things about personal data and covers a lot of things about reading. And he pointed out in the talk that he gave that it was really just that women didn't
Yeah,
putting that information
I
out
can
there.
understand that too. I mean, I don't know that I would want random guys to know that I'm out there and available without being able to see who they were. That is pretty scary. And again, I'm old enough that my dating life preceded smartphones. So it's having to imagine myself in a lot of these situations. But you, on the other hand, got a chance to try out some of these apps. Did you ever get a chance to try Tinder?
I did use Tinder for a bit. It wasn't until I had moved to this area that it became available for Android. And I'm not sure what it was like in other places. So I just know here, and it was pretty big here. You know, most people I think here kind of had a profile on multiple sites. And I think that I was sort of there during the heyday of it. And it's since moved on to other things. You know, they mentioned Bumble, which became big, and that was one of the people from co-founders from Tinder. The one woman moved on to create Bumble, and that has been bigger. And there's all these other sites, and they've kind of all moved towards a slightly more restrictive mode of doing things, because initially there was no limit on how many profile somebody could swipe on. So, you know, even in a large metro area, people just go through everybody.
I guess you figure you swipe right enough times, then you gotta meet somebody eventually.
Right.
It's interesting how you say that it's become more restrictive. That's sort of following the internet in general. I mean, originally there was the whole idea data wants to be free, and before we encountered a lot of the privacy and data stealing problems that we've had, people wanted to just put all the data out there all the time. And I know also when Tinder first came out, everybody was talking about how it was a hookup app. It was not, at least that I heard, considered as much a dating app as it was a one-night stand kind of app. And I don't know if that stigma has stayed with it enough that has helped make Bumble more popular.
I think it has changed somewhat. What made Bumble more popular was an extra layer of the woman for a hetero match, that the woman had an extra affirmative yes. I think it might be that she had to, there was some other step that I never used Bumble, but there was some additional step that was required for a match to happen. It was just sort of an extra layer of making women feel safer.
That makes sense. And once again, if the women who are using the app feel safe, they're going to go there. And if there are more women there, that's where the guys are going to go. So, one thing that this article made me think about was a recent study that came out about the decline in the numbers of Americans, particularly 20-something men, having sex. And it said, but and it pretty much all Americans under 30. And there was a discussion of that article on Reddit. And again, people said, it's just so hard to meet people. It's just so hard to meet people. So here we are with all these apps trying to get people able to meet each other, but we're still coming back to the same problem. Really hard to meet people.
Well, so there's another podcast I was listening to recently, which is FOMO Sapiens, and it's by Patrick McGinnis, who was the originator of the term FOMO. And he talks about how he didn't use the term faux very much. He actually used the term faux beau much more, which was fear of a better option.
Huh.
And the sense there is that if you have a lot of choices, then you can end up feeling paralyzed and not make any too many choices, and you are afraid to choose one thing because you know that means you can't choose something else, and so there's a fear of a better option. So instead of FOMO, where you go out and you do a bunch of things, but you're like, oh, I wish I could be also doing this other thing, you just sit at home and you go, well, there's this and there's this, I don't know which to choose, and ends up being nothing. I can imagine in this world where there are these apps, here are all these single people who are say that they are single, it can be very easy to just say, oh, I don't know, and then just stay at home.
It reminds me of that famous quote from Sylvia Plath, her book The Bell Jar, where she talks about seeing her life like a fig tree, and on every branch there's a different fig, and one fig is a family life, and another fig is the chance to be a poet, another fig is her life as a professor, and another fig is traveling all over the world. And she knows that if she picks one fig, she won't be able to pick another one. And so she just sits there in the middle of the tree, starving to death because she can't decide which one she wants to choose. And as she sits there, the figs drop to the ground and her choices start to diminish just because she can't make a decision.
That is incredibly un.
Yes, I can relate to that very much. And so I can see how that could be a problem with the apps, because the dating apps, because they sort of promise you to do a better job of finding someone perfect for you than you could do yourself meeting someone randomly in real life. And so you don't want to take a chance on someone who's not perfectly matched with you, because there might be someone who is perfectly matched. And what if you give up on someone perfect because you went with someone who's okay?
Yeah, there's, and the apps now are wise to that, and they try to steer away from issue, because that was definitely a big concern, especially in the with Match.com, eHarmony, where they say, oh, we scientifically will find you the best match, and now there's sort of these opaque algorithms, and they sort of say, well, we'll show you the most. We'll show you the best people first, like kind of, but otherwise, here's a person, here's a person, and we're only going to show you a few people, and so, choose one and see how it goes.
Well, at one point, I recall that eHarmony would tell you if they didn't have anyone that matched you. They would just say, I'm sorry, nobody matches you. Do they still do that, do
I think, well, there was a lawsuit because
you
one of
think?
the questions was, are you gay? He said yes. They said, okay, we can't match you.
Oh.
So there was some lawsuits about that.
Yeah, that particularly doesn't make sense. I could see if you were. Maybe had a really odd personality, it might be hard, but if you were
Well,
gay,
and
he could just
OkCupid.
match you with someone else who's gay and it shouldn't be a problem.
Well, when OkCupid launched, it was built out of this personality quiz app called the Spark. And the first thing that they launched with was this personality, what's your dating personality type? And that was a big thing. And they'd somebody with a similar personality type. And one of the personality types, and they had them separate for men and women. And one of the ones for men was called Last Man on Earth. And it pretty much said in the description, we would ask you to consider not using this app, this service.
Oh dear. Well, there is some truth to the fact that if you don't like yourself, it's going to be hard to get other people to like you. So if you're so down on the belief that nobody would date you unless you're the last man on earth, it's going to be hard to find someone to date.
And there's a little bit of that in here, and it's not something that I. As a guy, I never had to deal with it. The person who initially matches and then and then turns around and starts, cursing out the person because they aren't feeling it. That's my understanding. That's very common, along with the unsolicited pictures of private parts.
Yeah, that's something I don't. Well, I was going to say I don't really understand, but I guess I do kind of understand it. I think that's part of the problem with it being anonymous, not or just not in person. It's you're a step removed. So in person, if you're on a date and you just say, "Well, I just don't think there should be a second date. I just don't think this worked. You know, I like you, but you're just not someone it's going to work long term with." It's more likely in person they're just going to be a little more polite, whereas online, if they're pissed off, they know they're never going to see you again and they feel justified in doing whatever. Same thing with the pictures of private parts. You would not expose yourself to someone in a bar hoping, well, some people might, but they would get thrown out, hoping that that will draw people to you, you know? So the whole section about parties I found fascinating. The idea that parties in college are not about finding people to date or hook up with, that the idea of doing that is off-putting to a lot of people now. That parties should just be about hanging out with your friends, and you're creepy if you are trying to meet someone there.
I think it makes sense, and especially with the everything else going on in the world and Me Too stuff and everything, that for a student, being in school and being around school is their workplace. And so there's a real desire to separate one's love life from one's workplace.
That does make sense. Although, in a way, that would make it so much harder to meet people. I can understand maybe not wanting to date someone in your own major, but if you're in biology, why not look for someone in, you know, literature? Because you're not going to be having a lot of overlap, and most universities are pretty large. You, if you
I think it's, just in terms of, like, even in the dorm, kind of, oh, I don't want to date somebody from my dorm. I don't want to date somebody from my class. It just expanding circles and sort of keeping everything separate. So it's like, oh, I'm here to be with my friends and be at a party. I don't want anybody to come in between that. I don't want anything to get mixed up.
interesting, because that to me is exactly where you should be looking for someone to date, is within your circle of friends, within your circle of acquaintances, the people that you do have overlaps with. Maybe not just some random person from your dorm, because you might not have a lot in common with them, but the people that you do see often. And the idea that that's absolutely where you should not be looking for romance, I can see why people would have a hard time meeting people. And it's the idea that a relationship is ultimately going to fail, and so you have to protect yourself from that eventual failure and being around an ex before it's even started. I think that's kind of unfortunate.
And I think that's exactly what it is it's a preemptive protection against the consequences of failure. So along with the studies that show that young people are maybe not having sex as much, there's the other ones that also show that maybe they're not drinking as much. And I think that can go right in the same, so this very much the same reason, where you if you have the ability to look for romance by sitting on your couch, eating ice cream and half watching Netflix, then you don't need to, get yourself all dressed up and buy a whole set of extra going out clothes and then go out to a bar and spend however much money in the hopes of maybe running into somebody.
That's true. I wonder, though, how much the drinking is influenced by the legalization of marijuana and also the worries about date rape and being impaired.
I think that certainly the is having an effect.
Because that's something that I do remember from college that was a problem when people went out to parties and drank. There were a lot of bad situations and some happened to friends of mine. And actually, one thing that George used to do back when he was at college was he drove Bacchus, which was the like this is in the pre-Uber times. It was the little van that offered free transportation to students on campus so they wouldn't drive. And he would, specifically look out for at the beginning of the year drunk freshman girls and drive them back to their dorms because they were targets for a lot of guys with bad intentions. And so he's like, okay, ready to go home? You're ready to go home? And I don't know how many bad situations he might have stopped, but that was a real problem.
Yeah, and I think goes along with this, if you're going out with your friends, that you stay with your friends, you do not leave any of your friends behind. So if you were to meet somebody at a party, that's exactly a situation that your parents probably warned you about. Don't get into that situation. Go out with your friends, come back with your friends. So on the side of talking about how the dating apps can feel like a second job, that is definitely something I relate to.
Yes, I remember at one point you were going on dates, what, like at least once a week or something?
Which is not even that often compared to I have friends who, especially in New York, and you read these stories about, four or five a week.
Wow.
And that really can be a whole second job. And I was motivated to do that. I'm glad with the
Yes.
end. But if you're less certain about what you want out of that, I can imagine a real drag.
No kidding. I mean, that's like being a recruiter, the tech recruiters who are constantly calling and emailing people. You're a self-recruiter. But as it says in the article, it is sort of a numbers game. You have to meet a certain number of people before you meet the right person. And that's true in real life as well as online, unless you're going to have an arranged marriage, in which case you don't need to really meet anybody. Just there you go.
Well, I was curious whether in your extended contacts now, I remember you telling me several years ago about sort of a friend acquaintance who was trying to use the dating apps, and it was tougher in a less populous area just because there aren't as many people, and you tend to know the people that are in a small town.
I don't remember which friend that was, but that is definitely true. And I know that my friends who live in small college towns have especially had that problem because not only are there not that many people, but if you're part of the faculty or the staff, most people there are younger than you, and that makes it very difficult. So yes, I do think that like so many apps, Tinder and Bumble and other dating apps work better in a large city just because there are more people to choose from. But I think it has always been hard to meet people in a small town anyway. This just doesn't make it that much easier.
The flip side of the not as many people in towns is the story that's related in the article, where you have somebody from the next town over that you really wouldn't have any reason to run into. And even if they weren't that far geographically, at least within the span of where you might normally drive, but if they were just in the next town, you just run in different circles. And so I think that's one of the true advantages of these kinds of technologies is just the ability to get those circles to intersect.
Yes, and I think that overall, having these apps is really helpful for meeting people if you don't see them as the panacea for your love life. It does help you meet people you wouldn't otherwise meet, even though, given different circumstances, you might run in the same circles.
Something that this article doesn't talk about that I'm now remembering was a huge part of Tinder's initial success was the sort of the casino aspect of it. The slot machine, it's kind of like a slot machine where it just had this animation and the sound that went with getting a match. It was a little bit addictive.
Do you remember Hot or Not?
Yes.
It's basically an updated sort of Hot or Not, where you, I remember playing that game. I think it came out along with MySpace, I want to say, where you'd see the web page and you'd click on the person hot or not, and you could put your own picture up and see how many people rated you hot or not. And it was just, the picture and a yes or a no. And you're right, Tinder sort of gamified dating.
And that was right when everything was being gamified. Something else I wanted to mention is goes back to the very beginning of the article, and it talks about the decline of personal ads as represented in the wedding section of the New York Times,
Oh,
which
yes.
is not surprising, but it's what is surprising is that personal ads haven't gone away entirely.
Well, they've just moved to Craigslist. And it's funny, back in the early days of internet dating, that there was a stigma to it. I mean, a friend of mine who met her husband online, she said she used to hesitate to tell people that because they thought it sounded weird and suspicious. But nowadays, if you said you met someone through a personal ad, it brings to mind the sort of seamy Craigslist stuff, you know?
Right. Well, but I even in print, I've seen it at least in a couple of alumni magazines. People will
Really?
still, yeah.
Oh, you're saying people met through personal,
No.
no, there are personal ads in alumni magazines.
They still exist, at least for certain alumni magazines.
Wow, I did not know that, but it does kind of make sense. I guess you automatically have something in common.
Right.
I
And
just
it's,
went to such a small college that there's no point in that. If you want to meet someone, you talk to someone who talks to someone who talks to someone, you'll eventually hook up with them.
Yeah, I think it's now more it's more for the second marriages, third marriages, I'm the maybe that was a personal ad that was placed by a concierge matchmaker kind of. I don't know. That's
That does make sense. And that's something that we hadn't mentioned either, is that older people are using these apps as well. It's not just about, 20 and 30 somethings trying to hook up or find a date. It's about people maybe in their 50s and older who might be divorced. They might, be widowed, and maybe they are hitting the dating scene again for the first time in a long time. And I think this can be a good way to ease back into it because you don't have to put yourself out there in person right away.
I am noticing now that there are people in my life who want to be set up, and it's really hard to imagine the people that I know being set up with each other. That becomes much harder at a certain point.
Back in my 20s, I tried setting a couple of people up, and it was so disastrous. I decided I was never going to do that again. I'm terrible at that. The problem is I like all my friends kind of equally, and so I think they're all great, and I can't imagine how two of my friends couldn't just like each other because I like both of them, and it doesn't work that way.
I guess I take almost the opposite view where I can't imagine anyone with each other.
And one last thing I wanted to mention was the whole industry in profile help that dating apps have spawned, because now you have to have a good profile. There was even a TV show briefly where they would look at your dating profile on whatever app you were using and give you tips on better pictures to use, better words to use to describe yourself to get better results.
And that's something I've toyed with trying to offer my services in that field, but I would say that the OkCupid blog, it has that information, and it's very well done.
Well, the people don't always follow the advice,
No.
which is why you see a lot of pictures that look the same or look terrible. So it'll be interesting to see in the future how these apps change and morph as technology changes and privacy becomes more of an issue and hardware changes too.
Yeah, I wonder if there will be more of an auditory component now that we've been moving more and more to all these voice activated devices,
That would be
or if
really
it'll stay.
interesting.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Artist Materialist. Find us on the web at artistmaterialist.com. Please rate and review this podcast wherever you listen to it, and join us next time for article from Fast Company on no waste packaging.